The Hero. Read for you by Roy Dotrice. The city was dead, and the flames of its passing spread a red stain across the green-gray sky. It had been a long time dying. Resistance had lasted almost a week, and the fighting had been bitter for a while. But in the end, the invaders had broken the defenders, as they had broken so many others in the past. The alien sky with its double sun did not bother them. They had fought and won under skies of azure blue and speckled gold and inky black. The weather control boys had hit first, while the main force was still hundreds of miles to the east. Storm after storm had flailed at the streets of the city to slow defensive preparations and smash the spirit of resistance. When they were closer, the invaders had sent up howlers, unending high-pitched shrieks that echoed back and forth both day and night, and before long most of the populace had fled in demoralized panic. By then the attackers' main force was in range and launched plague bombs on a steady westward wind. Even then the natives had tried to fight back. From their defensive emplacements ringing the city, the survivors had sent up a hail of atomics, managing to vaporize one whole company whose defensive screens were overloaded by the sudden assault. But the gesture was a feeble one at best. By that time incendiary bombs were raining down steadily upon the city, and great clouds of acid gas were blowing across the plains. And behind the gas, the dreaded assault squads of the Terran Expeditionary Force moved on the last defences. Kagan scowled at the dented plastoid helmet at his feet, and cursed his luck. A routine mopping-up detail, he thought. A perfectly routine operation, and some damned automatic interceptor emplacement somewhere had lobbed a low-grade atomic at him. It had only been a near miss, but the shock waves had damaged his hip rockets and knocked him out of the sky, landing him in this godforsaken little ravine east of the city. His light plastoid battle armor had protected him from the impact, but his helmet had taken a good whack. Kagan squatted and picked up the dented helmet to examine it. His long-range comm and all his sensory equipment were out. With his rockets gone too, he was crippled, deaf, dumb, and half-blind. He swore. A flicker of movement along the top of the shallow ravine caught his attention. Five natives came suddenly into view, each carrying a hair-trigger submachine gun. They carried them at the ready, trained on Kagan. They were fanned out in line, covering him from both right and left. One began to speak. He never finished. One instant, Kagan's screeched gun lay on the rocks at his feet. Quite suddenly, it was in his hand. Five men will hesitate where one alone will not. During the brief, flickering instant before the native's fingers began to tighten on their triggers, Kagan did not pause. Kagan did not hesitate. Kagan did not think. Kagan killed. The screech gun emitted a loud, ear-piercing shriek. The enemy squad leader shuddered as the invisible beam of concentrated, high-frequency sound ripped into him. Then his flesh began to liquefy. By then, Kagan's guns had found two more targets. The guns of the two remaining natives finally began to chatter. A rain of bullets enveloped Kagan as he whirled to his right, and he grunted on the impact as the shots caromed off his battle armor. His screech gun leveled, and a random shot sent it spinning from his grasp. Kagan did not hesitate or pause as the gun was wrenched from his grip. He bounded to the top of the shallow ravine with one leap, directly toward one of the soldiers. The man wavered briefly and brought up his gun. The instant was all Kagan needed. With all the momentum of his leap behind it, his right hand smashed the gun butt into the enemy's face, and his left, backed by 1,500 pounds of force, hammered into the native's body right under the breastbone. Kagan seized the corpse and heaved it toward the second native, who had ceased fire briefly as his comrade came between himself and Kagan. Now his bullets tore into the airborne body. He took a quick step back, his gun level and firing. And then Kagan was on him. Kagan knew a searing flash of pain as a shot bruised his temple. He ignored it, drove the edge of his hand into the native's throat. The man, toppled, lay still. Kagan spun, still reacting, searching for the next foe. He was alone. Kagan bent and wiped the blood from his hand with a piece of the native's uniform. He frowned in disgust. It was going to be a long trek back to camp, he thought, tossing the blood-soaked rag casually to the ground. Today was definitely not his lucky day. He grunted dismally, then scrambled back down into the ravine to recover his screech gun and helmet for the hike. On the horizon, the city was still burning. Rigelli's voice was loud and cheerful as it came crackling over the short-range communicator nestled at Kagan's fist.
"So it's you, Kagan," he said, laughing. "Oh, you signaled just in time. My senses were starting to pick up something. Little closer, and I would have screeched you down."
"My helmet's busted, and the sensors are out," Kagan replied. "Damned hard to judge distance. Long-range comm is busted, too."
"The brass was wondering what happened to you," Rigelli cut in. "Made him sweat a little, but I figured you'd turn up sooner or later."
"Right," Kagan said. "One of these mudworms zapped the hell out of my rockets, and took me a while to get back. But I'm coming in now." He emerged slowly from the crater he had crouched in, coming in sight of the guard in the distance. He took it slow and easy. Outlined against the outpost barrier, Rigelli lifted a ponderous silver-grey arm in greeting. He was armoured completely in a full Duraloy battlesuit that made Kagan's plastoid armour look like tissue paper, and sat in the trigger seat of a swiveling screech-gun battery. A bubble of defensive screens enveloped him, turning his massive figure into an indistinct blur. Kagan waved back and began to eat up the distance between them with long, loping strides. He stopped just in front of the barrier, at the foot of Rigelli's emplacement.
"You look damn battered," said Rigelli, appraising him from behind a plastoid visor, aided by his sensory devices. "That light armor doesn't buy you a nickel's worth of protection. Any farm boy with a pea-shooter can plug you."
Kagan laughed. "Well, at least I can move. You may be able to stand off an assault squad in that Duraloy monkey suit, but I'd like to see you do anything on offense, chum, and defense doesn't win wars."
"Your pot," Rigelli said. "This sentry duty is boring as hell."
He flicked a switch on his control panel, and a section of the barrier winked out. Kagan was through it at once. A split second later, it came back on again. Kagan strode quickly to his squad barracks. The door slid open automatically as he approached it, and he stepped inside gratefully. It felt good to be home again, and back at his normal weight. These light-gravity mud holes made him queasy after a while. The barracks were artificially maintained at Wellington normal gravity, twice Earth normal. It was expensive, but the brass kept saying that nothing was too good for the comfort of our fighting men. Kagan stripped off his plastoid armour in the squad ready room and tossed it into the replacement bin. He headed straight for his cubicle and sprawled across his bed. Reaching over to the plain metal table alongside his bed, he yanked open a drawer and took out a fat, greenish capsule. He swallowed it hastily and lay back to relax as it took hold throughout his system. The regulations prohibited taking synthostim between meals. He knew, but the rule was never enforced. Like most troopers, Kagan took it almost continuously to maintain his speed and endurance at maximum. He was dozing comfortably a few minutes later when the comm box mounted on the wall above his bed came to sudden life.
"Kagan?"
Kagan sat up instantly, wide awake.
"Acknowledged," he said. "Report to Major Grady at once."
Kagan grinned broadly. His request was being acted on quickly, he thought, and by a high officer, no less. Dressing quickly in loose-fitting brown fatigues, he set off across the base. The high officer's quarters were at the centre of the outpost. They consisted of a brightly lit three-storey building, blanketed overhead by defensive screens and ringed by guardsmen in light battle armour. One of the guards recognised Kagan, and he was admitted on orders. Immediately beyond the door, he halted briefly,
as the bank of censors scanned him for weapons. Troopers, of course, were not allowed to bear arms in the presence of high officers. Had he been carrying a screech gun, alarms would have gone off all over the building, while the tractor beams hidden in the walls and ceilings immobilized him completely. But he passed the inspection and continued down the long corridor toward Major Grady's office. A third of the way down, the first set of tractor beams locked firmly onto his wrists. He struggled the instant he felt the invisible touch against his skin, but the tractors held him steady. Others, triggered automatically by his passing, came on as he continued down the corridor. Kagan cursed under his breath and fought with his impulse to resist. He hated being pinned by tractor beams, but those were the rules if you wanted to see a high officer. The door opened before him, and he stepped through. A full bank of tractor beams seized him instantly and immobilized him. A few adjusted slightly, and he was snapped to rigid attention, although his muscles screamed resistance. Major Carl Grady was working at a cluttered wooden desk a few feet away, scribbling something on a sheet of paper. A large stack of papers rested at his elbow, an old-fashioned laser pistol sitting on the top of them as a paperweight. Kagan recognized the laser. It was some sort of heirloom passed down in Grady's family for generations. The story was that some ancestor of his had used it back on Earth in the fire wars of the early 21st century. Despite his age, the thing was still supposed to be in working order. After several minutes of silence, Grady finally set down his pen and looked up at Kagan. He was unusually young for a high officer, but his unruly grey hair made him look older than he was. Like all high officers, he was earthborn. Frail and slow before the assault squad troopers from the dense heavy-gravity war worlds of Wellington and Rommel. "Report your presence," Grey said curtly. As always, his lean, pale face mirrored immense boredom. "Field Officer John Kagan, Assault Squads. Terran Expeditionary Force." Grady nodded, not really listening. He opened one of the desk drawers and extracted a sheet of paper. "Kagan," he said, fiddling with his paper, "I think you know why you're here." He tapped the paper with his fingers. "What's the meaning of this?" "Just what it says, Major," Kagan replied. He tried to shift his weight, but the tractor beams held him rigid. Grady noticed and gestured impatiently. "At rest," he said. Most of the tractor beam snapped off, leaving Kagan free to move, if only at half his normal speed. He flexed in relief and grinned. "My term of enlistment is up within 2 weeks, Major. I don't plan to re-enlist, so I've requested transportation to Earth. That's all there is to it." Grady's eyebrows arched a fraction of an inch, but the dark eyes beneath them remained bored. "Really?" he asked. "You've been a soldier for almost 20 years now, Kagan. Why retire?" "I'm afraid I don't understand." Kagan shrugged. "I don't know. I'm getting old. Maybe I'm just getting tired of camp life. It's all starting to get boring, taking one damn mud hole after another. I want something different, some excitement." Grady nodded. "I see. But I don't think I agree with you, Kagan." His voice was soft and persuasive. "I think you're underselling the TEF. There is excitement ahead. If you'd only give us a chance." He leaned back in his chair, toying with a pencil he had picked up. "I'll tell you something, Kagan. You know we've been at war with the Rangan Empire for nearly 3 decades now. Direct clashes between us and the enemy have been few and far between up to now. Do you know why?" "Sure," Kagan said. Grady ignored him. "I'll tell you why," he continued. "So far, each of us has been struggling to consolidate his position by grabbing those little worlds in the border regions, these mudholes, as you call them. But they're very important mudholes. We need them for bases, for their raw materials, for their industrial capacity, and for the conscript labor they provide. That's why we try to minimize damage in our campaigns, and that's why we use site war tactics, like the howlers, to frighten away as many natives as possible before each attack, to preserve labor." "I know all that," Kagan interrupted with typical Wellington bluntness. "What of it? I didn't come here for a lecture." Grady looked up from his pencil. "No," he said, "no, you didn't. So I'll tell you, Kagan. The prelims are over. It's time for the main event. There are only a handful of unclaimed worlds left. Soon now we'll be coming into direct conflict with the Rangan Conquest Corps. Within a year we'll be attacking their bases."
The Major stared at Kagan expectantly, waiting for reply. When none came, a puzzled look flickered across his face. He leaned forward again.
"Don't you understand, Kagan?" he asked. "What more excitement could you want? No more fighting these piddling civilians in uniform with their dirty little atomics and their primitive projectile guns. The Harangans are a real enemy. Like us, they've had professional army for generations upon generations. They're soldiers, born and bred. Good ones, too. They've got screens and modem weapons. They'll be foes to give our assault squads a real test."
"Maybe," Kagan said doubtfully, "but that kind of excitement isn't what I had in mind. I'm getting old. I've noticed I'm definitely slower lately. Even Synthostim isn't keeping up my speed." Grady shook his head. "You've got one of the best records in the whole TEF, Kagan. You've received the Stellar Cross twice, and the World Congress decoration three times. Every comm station on Earth carried the story when you saved the landing party on Tarigo. Why should you doubt your effectiveness now? We're going to need men like you against the Rangans. Re-enlist."
"No," said Kagan emphatically. "The regs say you're entitled to your pension after 20 years, and those medals have earned me a nice bunch of retirement bonuses. Now I want to enjoy them." He grinned broadly. "As you say, everyone on Earth must know me. I'm a hero. With that reputation, I figure I can have a real screech-out." Grady frowned and drummed on the desk impatiently. "I know what the regulations say, Kagan, but no one ever really retires. You must know that. Most troopers prefer to stay with the front. That's their job. That's what the war worlds are all about."
"I don't really care, Major," Kagan replied. "I know the regs, and I know I have a right to retire on full pension. You can't stop me." Grady considered the statement calmly, his eyes dark with thought.
"All right," he said, after a long pause. "Let's be reasonable about this. You retire with full pension and bonuses. We'll set you down on Wellington in a place of your own, or Rommel, if you like. We'll make you a youth barracks director, any age group you like, or a training camp director. With your record, you can start right at the top."
"Uh-uh," Kagan said firmly. "Not Wellington, not Rommel, Earth."
"But why? You were born and raised on Wellington, in one of the hill barracks, I believe. You've never seen Earth."
"True," said Kagan. "But I've seen it in camp telecasts and flicks, and I like what I've seen. I've been reading about Earth a lot lately, too. So now I want to see what it's like." He paused, then grinned again. "Let's just say I want to see what I've been fighting for." Grady's frown reflected his displeasure.
"I'm from Earth, Kagan," he said. "I tell you, you won't like it. You won't fit in. The gravity is too low, and there are no artificial heavy gravity barracks to take shelter in. Synthostim is illegal, strictly prohibited. But war worlders need it, so you'll have to pay exorbitant prices to get the stuff. Earthers aren't reaction-trained either. They're different kind of people. Go back to Wellington. You'll be among your own kind."
"Maybe that's one of the reasons I want Earth," Kagan said stubbornly. "On Wellington, I'm just one of hundreds of old vets. Hell, every one of the troopers who does retire heads back to his old barracks. But on Earth, I'll be a celebrity. Why, I'll be the fastest, strongest guy on the whole damn planet. That's got to have some advantages." Grady was starting to look agitated.
"What about the gravity?" he demanded. "The Synthostim?"
"I'll get used to light gravity after a while, that's no problem. And I won't be needing that much speed and endurance,
so I figure I can kick the synthestim habit." Grady ran his fingers through his unkempt hair and shook his head doubtfully. There was a long, awkward silence. He leaned across the desk, and suddenly his hand darted towards the laser pistol. Kagan reacted. He dove forward, delayed only slightly by the few tractor beams that still held him. His hand flashed toward Grady's wrist in a crippling arc, and suddenly wrenched to a halt as the tractor beams seized Kagan roughly, held him rigid, and then smashed him to the floor. Grady, his hand frozen halfway to the pistol, leaned back in the chair. His face was white and shaken. He raised his hand, and the tractor beams let up a bit. Kagan climbed slowly to his feet. "You see, Kagan," Grady said, "that little test proves you're as fit as ever. You'd have gotten me if I hadn't kept a few tractors on you to slow you down. I tell you, we need men with your training and experience. We need you against Rangans. Re-enlist." Kagan's cold blue eyes still seethed with anger. "Damn the Rangans," he said. "I'm not re-enlisting. No goddamn little tricks of yours are going to make me change my mind. I'm going to Earth. You can't stop me." Grady buried his face in his hands and sighed. "All right, Kagan," he said at last. "You win. I'll put through your request." He looked up one more time, and his dark eyes looked strangely troubled. "You've been a great soldier, Kagan. We'll miss you. I tell you that you'll regret this decision. Are you sure you won't reconsider?" "Absolutely sure," Kagan snapped. The strange look suddenly vanished from Grady's eyes. His face once more took on the mask of bored indifference. "Very well," he said curtly. "You are dismissed." The tractor stayed on Kagan as he turned. They guided him very firmly from the building.
"You ready, Kagan?"
Regelli asked, leaning casually against the door of the cubicle. Kagan picked up the small travel bag and threw one last glance around to make sure he hadn't forgotten anything. He hadn't. The room was quite bare. "Guess so," he said, stepping through the door. Regelli slipped on the plastoid helmet that had been cradled under his arm and hurried to catch up as Kagan strode down the corridor.
"Well, I guess this is it," he said as he matched strides.
"Yeah," Kagan replied. "A week from now, I'll be taking easy back on Earth while you're getting blisters on your tail sitting around in that damn Duraloy tuxedo of yours." Regelli laughed.
"Maybe," he said, "but I still say you're nuts to go to Earth of all places when you could command a whole damn training camp on Wellington, assuming you wanted to quit at all, which is also crazy."
The barracks door slid open before them, and they stepped through. Regelli is still talking. A second guard flanked Kagan on the other side. Like Regelli, he was wearing light battle armor. Kagan himself was in full-dress whites, trimmed with gold braid. A ceremonial laser, deactivated, was slung in a black leather holster at his side. Matching leather boots and a polished steel helmet set off the uniform. Azure blue bars on his shoulder signified field officer rank. His medals jangled against his chest as he walked. Kagan's entire third assault squad was drawn up at attention on the space field behind the barracks in honor of his retirement. Alongside the ramp to the shuttlecraft, a group of high officers stood by, cordoned off by defensive screens. Major Grady was in the front row, his bored expression blurred somewhat by the screens. Flanked by the two guards, Kagan walked across the concrete slowly, grinning under his helmet. Pipe music welled out over the field, and Kagan recognized the TEF battle hymn and the Wellington anthem. At the foot of the ramp, he turned and looked back. The company spread out before him saluted in unison on a command from the high officers and held position until Kagan returned the salute. Then one of the squad's other field officers stepped forward and presented him with his discharge papers. Jamming them into his belt, Kagan threw a quick, casual wave to Regelli, then hurried up the ramp
It lifted slowly behind him. Inside the ship, a crewman greeted him with a curt nod. "Got special quarters prepared for you," he said. "Follow me. Trip should only take about 15 minutes. They will transfer you to a starship for the Earth trip." Kagan nodded and followed the man to his quarters. They turned out to be a plain, empty room, reinforced with duralloy plates. A viewscreen covered one wall. An acceleration couch faced it. Alone, Kagan sprawled out on the acceleration couch, clipping his helmet to a holder on the side. Tractor beams pressed down gently, holding him firmly in place for the liftoff. A few minutes later, a dull roar came from deep within the ship, and Kagan felt several gravities press down upon him as the shuttlecraft took off. The viewscreen, suddenly coming to life, showed the planet dwindling below. The viewer blinked off when they reached orbit. Kagan started to sit up, but found he still could not move. The tractor beams held him pinned to the couch. He frowned. There was no need for him to stay on the couch once the craft was in orbit. Some idiot had forgotten to release him. "Hey!" he shouted, figuring there would be a cumbuck somewhere in the room. "These tractors are still on. Loosen the damn things so I can move a little." No one answered. He strained against the beams. Their pressure seemed to increase. The blasted things were starting to pinch a little, he thought. Now these morons were turning the knob the wrong way. He cursed under his breath. "No!" he shouted. "Now the tractors are getting heavier. You're adjusting them the wrong way." But the pressure continued to climb, and he felt more beams locking onto him, until they covered his body like an invisible blanket. The damn things were really starting to hurt now. "You idiots," he yelled. "You morons! Cut it out, you bastards!" With a surge of anger, he strained against the beams, cursing. But even Wellington-bred muscle was no match for tractors. He was held tightly to the couch. One of the beams was trained on his chest pocket. Its pressure was driving his stellacross painfully into his skin. The sharp edge of the polished metal had already sliced through the uniform, and he could see a red stain spreading slowly through the white. The pressure continued to mount, and Kagan writhed in pain, squirming against his invisible shackles. It did no good. The pressure still went higher, and more beams came on. "Cut it out," he screamed, "you bastard! I'll rip your bolt and get out of here! You're killing me, damn it!" He heard the sharp snap of a bone suddenly breaking under the strain. Kagan felt a stab of intense pain in his right wrist. An instant later, there was another snap. "Cut it out!" he cried, his voice shrill with pain. "You're killing me, damn you! You're killing me!" And suddenly, he realized he was right. Grady looked up with a scowl at the aide who entered the office. "Yes, what is it?" The aide, a young Earther in training for high officer rank, saluted briskly.
"We've just got the report from the shuttlecraft, sir. It's all over. They want to know what to do with the body."
"Space it," Grady replied. "Good as anything." A thin smile flickered across his face, and he shook his head. "Too bad. Kagan was a good man in combat, but his sight training must have slipped somewhere. We should send a strong note back to his barracks conditioner. Though it's funny it didn't show up until now." He shook his head again. "Earth," he said. For a moment he even had me wondering if it was possible. But when I tested him with my laser, I knew. "No way, no way." He shuddered a little. "As if we'd ever let a war worlder loose on Earth." Then he turned back to his paperwork. As the aide turned to leave, Grady looked up again. "Oh, one other thing," he said. "Don't forget to send the PR release back to Earth. Make it, War Hero Dies When Rangans Blast Ship. Jazz it up good. Some of the big comm networks should pick it up, and it'll make good publicity. Oh, and forward his medals to Wellington. They'll want them for his barracks museum." The aide nodded, and Grady returned to his work. He still looked quite bored.